So, hello, I'm Robert Pickering. Welcome to my talk. This is Exploring Git Objects with F#. I'm Robert Pickering. Can't quite see the bottom of the slide there, but never mind. So this picture here is actually from an English television program called The Old Git. Git is actually a British word meaning an unpleasant or contemptible person. And I believe Linus has said that the Git source control system is named after this word because he is a grumpy old man, and it's not an acronym as many people think. So yeah, thanks very much for coming to the session. We've got three objectives. Show that working with binary formats doesn't have to be hell. Show how Git's objects database works. So does everybody here use Git? Yes? It's got a reputation for being complicated, but it works well. So I wanted to use this session to lift the lid and show how it works under the hood. And also, finally, to show a bit of F# in action, an applied session on F#. We've got lots of code to show you. We're going to take it nice and slowly. We'll have questions from the floor as we go along, if you like. So this is a project I'm going to be talking about. It's a something I did myself for working with the Git object database. It's more of a toy status. I was hoping to have it developed into something more useful by now. But it's still very much early days. But don't worry, there's plenty of code to show you. It does actually work in the sense that it can parse all the different Git objects and look at their various properties. It just can't do much else for now. So why a new library? Why not just use one of the existing ones? Well, first is just for fun and sort of a personal learning experience. The second reason is I couldn't find any library that gives you low-level access to the Git objects. There's quite a few other projects use the same format as Git to achieve various things. Notably, there's a couple of projects that do backups of data using the Git format, because what Git is very good at is taking a version of the file system and knowing its exact state. So that can be used for things other than source control. So first of all, we're going to talk about binary formats. And the big problem I've always found with binary formats is that one byte looks very much like another. So that makes it makes it a little tricky to debug. But there are techniques to work around that, little debugging tools that you can build yourself. And also, working with binary formats is less complicated than you might think. There's only really three things we've needed to do in this project. One is read a fixed number of bytes, so read the next 20 bytes and change it into a different data format. The next thing we need to do is read a specified number of bytes, so the file might say 200, which means you read the next 200 bytes and then convert that into some other data format. Or read from the byte stream until a certain sequence of bytes come up. So read from the stream until you see a null, a zero character, or read from the stream until you see a space, and then take all those bytes before that and convert that into some other data format. And yeah, so that's really all there is to dealing with binary data. And now to talk about Git itself. So what the Linux community did with Git was, first of all, they built a versionable file system, and then they built a source control on top of that. And the Git object database is really what holds that versionable file system. And so I'm going to explain how that works, how the file format works. This is kind of the simplified version, because what Git does, it has this format which it uses with small repositories and for small changes, so that which is working with a number of different files for each object, well, one file per object. But as a repository gets bigger, it then does a phase where it goes through, gathers up all those objects, and packs them into one file. So we're not going to look at that the pack file today. We're just going to look at the individual files. But the concepts are all the same. It's just with a pack file, it compresses them all into one file. So it's probably not that great, but that's the file system. We have this objects directory, and under it a number of subdirectories, all starting with a number. And in it, there are a number of files with long file names. So as I say, the Git's, if you look in a Git repository, you'll see a .git folder. If you open that up, you'll see another objects folder. And then you'll see a number of files that are all stored with a SHA1 hash. Does everybody know what a SHA1 hash is? Yes, that's all okay. So the first two digits are the folder name, and then the rest of the hash is the file name. That's just to spread the files evenly between a number of different folders. So Git has four object types. The first is a blob that's going to hold all the data, that's going to hold all the file. The second is a tree, so that's going to hold the directory structure. The third is a commit, that holds all the information about a commit, so who made the commit, what time it was made, the commit message. And then tags are how tags are stored. If you want to tag a particular commit to say this is my release version, all the information will be stored in a tag. And I guess it's the data structure that makes Git different from things that came before it, like SVN and because whereas SVN was very good at versioning files, it was very hazy on the versions of directories. So everything worked well with SVN until you tried to rename a directory, and then everything got a bit loopy. Whereas renaming tends to work very well in Git. So this is how blobs and trees fit together. You have this tree, always have a root tree. So this is just a directory structure with three files and two directories. One is a README file. One is a called somethingfs, so an F# file. And one is called sumtestfsx, so an F# script file. Now the data is all stored of the file, is all stored in the blobs. And the tree structure defines the directory. So it's the tree structure that holds the file names. The file names along with the SHA hash of the blob. Or in this case, the SHA hash of the next level tree. So a tree can either point to a blob or another tree. So how does that work with versioning? So say we changed README. What it would do is it would create a new blob with a different SH hash because the contents changed. So the contents of the tree would also change because the SH of the file had changed. But as the source directory has not changed at all, it would just reuse this part of the tree. So that way, with versioning, things that change create new files. Things that don't change, it shares the same structure. So it saves space that way. So commits work by showing us where the root of the tree is. So the commit has the blob holds all the metadata plus an SH hash to the tree where the root is stored. Otherwise, we wouldn't know where to look in the database for the root of the tree because it would appear just as another file that looked the same as all the other files in the database. And so commits will always point to a tree, and then it will point to the previous commit, its parent commit. So like that, it forms a linked list of all the commits so that you can go backwards in time and see the history of your version tree. And so tags work in a very, very similar way to commits. We have a tag object that points to a commit and holds metadata about the tag. So any message, who was the tagger, etc. So that covers how the Git objects work from a high level. Is there any questions about that? Okay, good. So the other two things you need to know about Git objects, they're stored as a deflate stream. If you ever go into your Git directory and try and read an object in a text editor, you'll see that it just looks like a load of junk data. That's just because it's compressed using deflate, which is the same algorithm used as zip. It's just for an individual file rather than a group of files. So if you deflate if you reinflate it, it starts to look like a real text file and is a lot easier to read. So we'll have a look at that in a moment. And then each object has a header, which is made up of the following thing: a name, so just an ASCII name like blob, tree, etc. A space, and then the length of the stream, which is just a number in ASCII digits, and then a null character. So to read the header, all you've got to do is read up to the first null character. And then you know what type of object is and how long the stream is. So this is an example of a header. It's a blob, which is 124 bytes long. So we're just going to hop out of that, and have a look at some code. So I have here a Git object. I think this one is a blob, although I'm not quite sure. These all come from a little test repository. Here in the objects directory. So as I say, that doesn't make much sense, but what we have here is F-sharp interactive. So I'm just going to load my DLL. So this is the DLL that I've created from this project here. So do you all know F-sharp interactive? Okay. For those of you that don't, it just allows you to interactively execute code by pressing Alt Enter. So I have a little macro to find a file name. And then I've got this function, which very simply will open the deflate stream. So this is a stream object, just a .NET stream. It wraps it in a stream reader to get the ASCII characters from it, and then we're going to read it to the end. So if we do that for our blob object, we'll see that first of all we get this object's header, then we get the number of bytes, that's the null character, and here we have hello world, the message from the file. Are the fonts big enough there? Is that readable to you all? Okay. Okay, so this is the core of the flipping Git library. What it is, it's an F-sharp data type, a discriminating union. A discriminating union is a type special to F-sharp. I guess it's a bit like a union in C, in that it allows you to store related data types that don't share the same structure. So with inheritance in object-oriented programming, all your descendants must inherit from a parent, so they share the parent structure. This is saying that these objects have a relationship. It can be either one of those objects, but they don't share a common structure. So it's very good for representing trees, like we have in the Git's object structure. And I guess the equivalence of it in a object-oriented situation is you would use a visitor pattern to visit all the nodes in the tree. So this is like a visitor pattern, only it's built into the language for you. So I'll just hop out of the presentation and show you that in the code to run through the basic structure. Right, so basically, we have a blob which has an int, which is the length. So this syntax here means a tuple. So an int plus the arrow means a function. So unit is like void, so a function that takes no arguments but returns a stream. So that's, if we have a blob, this data type's going to give you the length of the stream plus a function to open it. If you have a tree, so a directory structure, it's going to give you the length of the file and also a tree structure. So this is a record type. It's a lot like a class. So this is just a field in the class, which points to another type with the three members. So for a commit, similarly, you're going to get the length of the commit and an object that represents the commit. So in this case, you're going to have a tree, the parent commit, the author, the committer, and the text of the commit. And again, a tag is very similar to a commit. You get the hash of the object, the tag, the tagger, and the text of the commit. So hope that all makes sense. Right, so to parse the stream, this is the code that does it. We have a helper function just to open the deflate stream. There's a standard .NET function, .NET object for working with deflate streams. We have a helper function to read the header. So all this helper function does is take the first few bytes up to the first null character. And it returns two things, the tag, which is a string with a tag name, and the length, which is the ASCII digits just converted into an integer. So then we use F-sharp's pattern matching syntax. So one thing that F-sharp is good at, it has this pattern matching syntax, which is match with. And then you have your different cases. So this would be one case. So here we say, if we see a blob, we're going to go into this blob case where we create the blob object. And then this is a lambda function where we reopen the stream if this lambda function is called. And so the reason that we reopen it is that here we have a use, which means when this goes out of scope, it's going to close the screen. The stream. So this gives the user the possibility to reopen it. And the reason that we do that is in all these other cases, we definitely want to close the stream. So it would be too dangerous to leave it open just in this one case. Similarly, if we see the word commit, we're going to parse the commit object. If we see the word tree, we're going to parse the tree object. If we see the word tag, we're going to parse it as a tag object. And if we see everything else, we're just going to fail, giving an error message of unknown tag. So this is what a git commit looks like without the header. So we have a series of tags here. They're key value pairs, I guess, tree, and then a key value pair of a hash. Parent, key value, the key parent, and then the value of a hash. The author, which is a string of the author's name, email address, etc. The committer, sort of the same information as the author. And then beneath it is the text of the commit. So here is how we represent a commit. It's the first object we're going to cover. So this is an F-sharp record type. A record type allows you to store a number of different fields. So here we have a field for the tree, which is a hash type. I'll show you what a hash type is in a minute, but it's just a way of representing that SHA1 hash. Just have two strings for the author and committer, and then another string for the text of the commit. So this is the code of the how to parse a commit. We have the names of the tags we want to read, a helper function which actually does the reading of the tags. And it creates a map, so basically an immutable dictionary of all the different tags, and then also returns the text. Then here we read the values from the map, and then we create this little commit object. So again, I can show you that in action. If we just hop into F-sharp Interactive. Have a test case for each of the object types. So if we parse, if we call git object parse file on a blob file, what we'll see is it returns us this blob object, tells us that it was 12, and also a function to reopen the file should we want to read the data. So that was the blob object. We were talking about the commit, weren't we? So yes, here we can see in F# Interactive that it's pretty printed the commit object. It's given us a tree, which is a hash. This particular commit does have a parent. The parent is a option type in F#. So what option is? Option is a discriminating union that's built into the F# library. And it has it's two cases, a sum case, which holds a value, and none, which doesn't hold a value. So it's F# equivalent of null, because in F#, we try very hard to make sure things aren't null. So we have this option type, which gives you an idea whether something is present or not. So in the case of commit, something was present. and that's why we use the try find rather than this syntax here, which just means directly look up the object in the dictionary. Yeah, only the first commit. That's the way of telling you it's the root. Okay, so we saw this hash type earlier. It's just got two fields. One is a byte array, one is a string. That's because Git has two ways of storing hashes. Sometimes it will use ASCII characters, and sometimes it will use bytes directly. I don't know why it does that. I guess in some the byte is half the size, because you need two bytes to represent a single byte using ASCII characters. So a ASCII string would be 40 bytes, whereas using bytes directly is only 20 bytes. So we'll see parsing that later on. But it just has two helper functions for creating it, one that creates it from a byte array, one that creates it from a string. And all those helper functions do is take the whatever form it is, convert it to the other form, and then create an object. Oh, and it's got these two little helper functions. So this syntax here says take the first two characters, and that's to form the directory name. This syntax here says take all the remaining characters, that's to form the file name. So that helps us look up the hash in the file system. And we'll see that later on when we parse a folder. So this is what a Git tree object looks like. First you have a Unix style access code. Then you have a space, then you have the file name. And then you have a null character to terminate the file name. Then you have the binary hash of the SHA1 hash. And the whole structure repeats like that, no line breaks. So first to parse this, first we read up to the null, separate those two, and then we read the next 20 bytes as a binary hash. So this is how we do it. Each item has a tree line, which has the flags of the file name as an integer, the name of the file as a string, the hash as a binary object. And then we just have a wrapper object, which are the tree lines, so an array of all the files that we've parsed from this particular tree. So again, here's how we parse that. First of all, we have this function that reads up to the null. So if there is, that's again going to return an option type. If there is stuff in the buffer, it will return sum, and we'll pass into this function for parsing the file. If it returns none, it will just return, the parent function will return none. So if we manage to read some bytes from the buffer, we read up to the first space and parse that as an int. Then we read up to the first null and parse that as a string. Then we read the next 20 bytes from the buffer here, and that becomes our hash. So here we convert our flags to an int, and here we just put the file into the name field. So just have a quick demo of reading that. So you see, this is the README. So we should have, we've got a README file name with its hash, so how to find it. And it seems that particular tree only has the README in it. Whereas this particular, the next tree has the README and also the source directory in it as well. So a tag is very similar to a commit object in that it has these name value pairs, the objects, the type, the name of the tag, the tagger, and then a free text description of the tag. So the way we represent it again is just using a record type with a number of fields, object, type, tag, tagger, text. And the way that we parse it is exactly the same as a commit. We have the tags that we're looking for. We read those tags from the map, and then from the map, we unload into the structured object. So we'll just have a quick look at that in action. So you see that it's again found the hash, the type was a commit, the name of the tag, the tagger, and the text. So now we come to how we could put that all together to create a Git a log. So this comes from a object that's going to represent our Git directory. We have a file to read the head hash, and then we've got this walk commits function that's going to read through the, going to take a hash. It's going to call the path function to combine it and find the directory name. We'll parse whatever object we find there. If it's a commit, we'll look if it has a parent, and we'll return its hash. If it's anything else, we'll return Well, if it's anything else other than a commit, we'll fail, because we only want to read through the commits. Otherwise, if it doesn't have a reparent, or we've gone over 10 commits, we return none to stop. And then this is just going to create a sequence of that. We create a folder object. We call log to get the sequence. And then we can just for each through that sequence. So you see in there's some debug code there too. I'll just turn that off. So we create the folder object, we call log to get the sequence of commits, and then we enumerate the sequence. Oh no, the debug doesn't work with the debug off. So F-sharp Interactive locks the DLL. That's why it couldn't build. Okay. So we enumerate our commits. And say we wanted to find one particular commit. What we could do is call seek dot filter. So that's the equivalent of where in link. And here we see that we have access to all these different fields. So if we wanted to filter on the text, we could say the text contains first, so I'm just missing a bracket there. So there we filtered. So probably the easier way to see that is if we count the number of commits. So seek dots. So you see that the filtered version returns no commits. Whereas the unfiltered version has two commits. Pardon? Yeah, probably. Still. What else could, so if we filter on the tree, maybe. Still zero. Anyway, doesn't matter. So So that's it, really. Just to summarize, we've seen that the Git object database is a fairly simple binary format that we can parse easily using F-sharp. So see that F-sharp's flexible type system helps us parse the binary format fairly easily. If you want more information, the code is all online at GitHub at this URL. And I did the slides using FS Reveal. It's a wrapper for JS Reveal. So they're all in HTML. You can find the slides there too. Are there any questions on that? Any other questions? Well, I think we'll wrap up there. Thank you very much for coming. It was very nice to see you all.